Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the end of a week here at the Damage Report. A week of change, a week of big events and big news. We've got a lot to talk about. Two town halls last night. You add them together, you almost have what one should be. And all of that and a lot of other stuff with me and with Brett Ehrlich, host of Happy Half Hour. Brett, how's it going?
Hi. It's fine, John. It's as good as anyone can expect it to be in this economy, in this environment.
Lack of stimulus.
This closed biodome we all have shut ourselves in. I'm Baldwin loopy, but I'm not quite Pauly Shore loopy. I'm somewhere in between the two of them in biodome. I'm not outside the biodome Tenacious D's first performance before the cameras loopy, but that happened in biodome. Just know that. And then also, John, this is just the beginning of a full day of great programming that I'm going to bring to you the best of my ability. Because not only are we joined on Happy Half Hour after postgame today by Phil Iskov, the creator of Sleepy Hollow that was on Fox, and then also the host of podcasts like It's 1999, and a podcast that's all about movies and TV shows that came out in 1999. There's a lot of them. He also is a former coworker of mine at a talent agency, and he's fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome.
A Canadian speaking about American politics. And then also after that, there's a Pop Trigger reunion on Common Room, John.
We're going to have Bree Esrig. That's going to be awesome.
Bree Esrig, Samantha Schocker, Jason Carter. It's all happening. And that will be at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern time on twitch.tv/TYT. Please, please show up, show out.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I think everyone's going to enjoy that. I'm glad that you mentioned that you're a bit loopy. I'm feeling like, do you ever wonder, Am I feeling crazy enough for YouTube, or am I too crazy to be doing a show right now? Like, am I in a state where I shouldn't even be doing a show? Because I'm like kind of feeling a little bit crazy, but I'm also kind of like the edge around that craziness is not being in a great mood. The news is just, I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of everything leading up to the election. It's all nonsense.
Yeah.
It's all bull-ass and it's bad for you, as a great comedian once said. Anyway, we've got a lot that we're going to be talking about. Not only the town halls, we're going to be having a debate about whether Donald Trump knows what is parody and what's true anymore. So we're going to have that. That's going to be fun. Dianne Feinstein, terrible. We're going to be talking about that. And then we'll be closing out the show the way that we always do on Friday, which is going to be with garbage people. I know what mine is. I have a few ideas of what the Dragon Squad garbage person of the week might be. Brett, yours, I have no idea. And I'm eager to be surprised. So when we get to that, we're going to have you go first this time. Just a heads up to the team behind the scenes.
Thank God.
You don't have to wait. Everybody who's already joined us in the chat, thank you for doing that. You can send us messages. We'll be responding as we go. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already so that people know that we're live. And with that, Brett, why don't we jump into this thing? Last night we had the town halls. Joe Biden having the town hall that was supposed to be the replacement for the debate that he wanted to have, but Donald Trump ran away from. And Donald Trump getting one because he didn't want to have to actually debate Joe Biden. And NBC News said, that's fine, we'll give you whatever you want. It didn't necessarily end that way, but that was the beginning. We're gonna walk through a couple different aspects of that debate. I want to start off with one that just enraged me, that has an interesting ending. But this is a moment that might have stood out for you if you're watching Donald Trump's town hall.
Good evening, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
I have to say, you have a great smile.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
So, he does. You're so handsome when you smile. Okay.
That's how Donald Trump flirts. And the next line is always, is your granddaughter single?
Totally. I guess is this good because it shows that NBC isn't like throttling every individual and making them only say an exact scripted thing? Is this a good sign, or is it just why is a woman complimenting the president's smile in a town hall? And why is that a thing?
And like getting excited, like she's here for it. She's here for it. And he is handsome when he smiles. I'm not gonna object to a provable fact. He's gorgeous. And it's something about his eyes when he smiles and how it really brings this skin together to reveal just how much of this has no makeup on it. Like you can see his eyelids and then the rest is this gorgeous orange sheen. Mm-hmm. He looks like Jupiter.
The hottest of the planets,
the
I would
planet,
say.
Not the god.
Exactly. So anyway, look, it was weird. It made him happy. I don't want him to be happy because he's a terrible guy doing terrible things and trying to get people killed. Here's the interesting thing though. When that happened, a lot of people's response was, wait, she was introduced as leaning Biden and yet she's complimenting Trump. That's weird. Are they lying about where these people are leaning? And perhaps not, because a little bit more research was done afterward. And she apparently said, she was interviewed afterward. This is Paulette Dale, registered Republican, is leaning towards Joe Biden, said, I wish you would smile more and talk less. Asked to elaborate, she said, the president steps in it every time he opens his mouth. I think the man has a nice smile. However, I'm not a fan.
Yes, I think tons of people have a nice smile who also shouldn't be president of the United States. I love Kanye's music.
I'm not there necessarily. Yeah, it's just, I get it. It's fine. And it shows that, you know, there's nothing we value more and the right values less than being able to hold seemingly contradictory thoughts that are both reflections of reality from your point of view. That's fine. It's just weird when like this is the one moment where you're exposed to the country and the part that comes across is, I think the president's kind of hot, not he needs to stop talking because he says crazy things. I guess that was being demonstrated in the town hall anyway. Maybe she didn't, maybe Paulette Dale didn't need to point that out when Savannah Guthrie was doing a pretty good job of doing it anyway.
Frequently, I don't think I'm in a movie where people's names are like so perfect, but Paulette Dale is absolutely that woman's name to the point where it seems like, you know, it is stranger than fiction. And I like anchoring Trump, like that's what an age appropriate romance would be between Trump and a woman. Like that's an age appropriate romance. And I think, you know, in the depths of a focus group, no one should do is that analysis where, oh, the, you know, 215,000 people are dead from COVID. But let's talk about Trump as a sexual object.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what people do, and that moment right there really does tip, like, essentialize everything about town halls and debates. And the woman behind Trump nodding. There was a woman behind Trump nodding in the blurry distance. That is the Mike Pence's fly of this debate. That is the, you know, 5 o'clock shadow of this town hall. That is the 5 o'clock shadow of Nixon. You know, it's just some little thing that had nothing to do with politics that despite everyone who is trying to orchestrate political discourse in a way that benefits people, the way politics is supposed to benefit people, everything just broke down because they were like, oh, Paulette's got a crush.
Yeah, I guess. And look, the people organizing it never could have known. Yeah, no, you're undoubtedly right. Although I don't think that this is going to dominate the discourse like the fly did. I don't think Joe Biden's going to be, or that Jim Carrey's going to be playing Paulette Dale on SNL this weekend.
Might be.
But you're right. It is a distraction. And honestly, I'm probably contributing to that. I honestly don't know. I don't know anything anymore.
But John, like that
sorts of conversations.
This is the first thing you cover, you know. And it was, and honestly, we had a morning meeting. Well, it's
Friday,
really hard to find.
I want to have fun.
Oh, 100%. But like, you're not the only person talking about this. This was number one on the cheat sheet on the Daily Beast. This was also number one or number three. Right. The other one was the woman nodding in the back. Like that's the Daily Beast top thing when they're not selling awesome cutlery. But this is exactly it, man.
Because you're right. We line up, we agree about that. But also, I think part of it is a feeling that covering the more substantive parts about COVID or whatever feels less likely to accomplish anything than covering this. Like for in any other political context, it would seem like a focus on how did he respond to the questions about mask wearing, his lack of leadership. That's more substantive, it's more consequential, people's lives are on the line. But he's never, ever, ever going to learn, so what's the point? It almost feels like that. And we're gonna talk about that stuff. We can transition right now if you want. But it feels like in a time when it doesn't seem to matter what you cover because he won't change and his base won't change, I don't know why not have a little bit of fun with it, maybe. And maybe that's being part of the problem. I honestly don't know. I'm literally losing my mind every day doing this show.
Well, those are just overlapping things. You want to have fun with it, but that's incidental because, you know, that just, you know, incidentally puts you in line with other people who this is, everything else is so ethereal. This is like boy likes girl. Girl says boy has nice smile. Like that's really what it comes down to. That's the accessibility of it all. And yeah. And I will point out, like I remember we had like this back and forth during the debate when Pence had a fly on his head. And I can take you through every single one of those debate moments that had absolutely nothing to do with policy that dominated the debates. Mike Dukakis is on a box or noticeably smaller than George Bush. Like that's that. They look different. Yeah. You know, George Bush reacts like this when Al Gore tries to come over and intimidate him physically. That's what people remembered. You know, the 5 o'clock shadow moment. It had nothing to do with when Rick Perry says, oops, Donald Trump cracking jokes at 17 people running against him. And the laughter is what people remembered. And that is, you know, in line with what a lot of us always go to. We don't even know if it's true anymore that the taller person wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It's like, you know, we are basically primitive humans 100,000 years ago trying to make sense of the storm, basically. We're just trying to find something that might be true.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today. And get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Savannah Guthrie did do a good job of pointing out how insane some of the things Donald Trump has done as president, including recently, have been, including recently when he retweeted a conspiracy theory that SEAL Team 6 had not, in fact, killed Osama bin Laden. That they had killed a stand-in, and then Joe Biden had ordered SEAL Team 6 to kill themselves, or so I honestly don't know. But let's see if we can learn anything from the town hall last night.
Just this week, you retweeted to your 87 million followers a conspiracy theory that Joe Biden orchestrated to have SEAL Team 6, the Navy SEAL Team 6, killed to cover up the fake death of Bin Laden. Now, why would you send a lie like that to your followers? You retweeted.
That was a retweet. That was an opinion of somebody, and that was a retweet. I'll put it out there. People can decide for themselves.
I don't take a position. You're not like someone's crazy uncle who can just retweet whatever.
That was a retweet, and I do a lot of retweets. And frankly, because the media is so fake and so corrupt, If I didn't have social media, I don't call it Twitter, I call it social media, I wouldn't be able to get the word out. And the word is
false.
And you know what the word is? The word is very simple. We're building our country stronger and better than it's ever been before. That's what's happening, and everybody knows it.
Okay, so the latter half of his answer had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that he retweeted something that even he says right there, I have no idea. I don't know anything. I'm just gonna retweet. I do a lot of retweets. I don't know what it means. But we're building something. I don't know. Brett, what do you think?
It's everyone knows that that is not a good answer. That answer is exactly his strategy and always has been. It's to kick up as much dust as possible. He has identified the vulnerability in discourse and the marketplace of ideas. And that is, if you develop an insulated group of yes folks who are either A, completely, they either completely believe the lies, or B, think that what you're doing is just owning the libs, then it doesn't matter. There doesn't have to be any consequence for you tweeting lies. And I think this whole format of a town hall versus a debate is to Trump's advantage. My instinct is that it's to Trump's advantage. I know you have Frank Luntz saying something to the contrary, but now it gets to be Trump versus the media, which is his desired position. It's so ironic that he is spreading fake news and somehow mad at the news for pointing out it's fake.
Yeah. So you're right. Okay. Now, so let's zoom in on this moment then. So this is what he wanted. It's him going up against the media, and that's fairly clear here. She's saying, why are you spreading insane things? And he's saying, look, it's social media, not Twitter. I retweet lots. That moment, if you're watching this, I assume his base likes that, I guess. Do undecided voters like that interaction? Because this is what he wanted. As you just said, he didn't want to debate Joe Biden. He wanted to just have one person who he can shout at. I would argue, I think she did pretty well in comparison to other moderators of other debates, both debates, honestly, that we've had so far. Is that interaction that he just had, or feel free to zoom out, is that what he wanted? Is that what's going to help him in the next 3 weeks?
That's what he wanted. Whether it helps him or not is a different question, but that's what he wants. That's his, you know, original position. That is the idiot moron who loves sparring, saying things, you know, reacting in real time, given his instincts for creating a moment that'll be shared around. Because for him, it's always having his name out there is his strategy. Like that's what he wants. And so he feels like he's having a moment. He knows he wants to solidify his base, so he does it. So that's what he wants. And the question is America done with it? What is it that gave Biden that huge bump? Is it Trump getting sick? And now that he's not sick anymore, is it gonna tighten again? Are the natural, you know, inclinations of everything, you know, the way everything naturally tightens when it gets closer and closer to the race? I don't know, but I don't think Trump's going to change now. And he proved that in this town hall.
Mm-hmm. He did.
What do you think? Do you think that's gonna help him?
I don't see how that could help him. I gave my sort of conclusion last night that I think that Joe Biden looked like a sane person who seems to care about the problems that are going on. All the caveats necessary. I'm a leftist, it's not for me. And so I could see that helping him a little bit. This is probably better for Trump than an hour and a half of him ranting like a madman over Chris Wallace and Joe Biden. I think that despite the content craziness of this one, I think the spectacle craziness of the last one probably hurt him more. But I don't see how like 4% of voters in Iowa are like, yeah, this is better. I like this, but I like the SEAL team guy who just retweets stuff and doesn't know what's going on. You know, right. I like the QAnon guy. We're gonna transition to that in just a minute. I don't know. Maybe it'll help a little bit. It seems better than the last one, but this does not seem like a big winner. In the first debate, Donald Trump had the opportunity to answer a very simple question, which was, do you denounce white supremacy? And he punted mostly. Even easier perhaps is, do you denounce and distance yourself from the QAnon movement? And he didn't do any better. Take a look.
Down our cities that are run by Democrats who don't know what
they're
doing.
While we're denouncing, let me ask you about QAnon. It is this theory that Democrats are a satanic pedophile ring and that you are the savior of that. Now, can you just once and for all state that that is completely not true and that disavow QAnon in its entirety?
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that. I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard, but I know nothing about it.
They believe it is a satanic cult run by the deep state.
Study the subject. I'll tell you what I do know about. I know about Antifa, and I know about the radical left, and I know how violent they are and how vicious they are, and I know how they're burning down cities run by Democrats, not run by Republicans.
Republican Senator Ben Sasse said, quote, QAnon is nuts, and real leaders call conspiracy theories conspiracy theories.
He may be
right. Why not just say it's crazy and not true?
He may be right. I just don't know about QAnon.
You do know.
I don't know. No, I don't know. I don't know.
You Let me ask me you another thing.
It. Let's waste a whole show. You start off with white supremacy. I denounce it. You start off with something else. Let's go. Keep asking me these questions.
Okay.
Let me just tell you what I do hear about it is they are very strongly against pedophilia. And I agree with that. I mean, I do agree with that. And I agree with it.
But there's not a satanic pedophile.
I have no idea. I know nothing about
that. You don't know that? Okay.
No, I don't know
you
that.
Just
neither,
this
neither
week.
Do you know that.
Okay, just this week.
Why aren't you asking me about Antifa? Why aren't you asking me about the radical left?
Because you're
voluntary.
Why
aren't you asking Joe Biden questions about why doesn't he condemn Antifa? Why does he say it doesn't exist?
Because you're here
Antifa,
before me.
No, she's so cute. Antifa exists. They're vicious.
That's what I needed. I needed to see him refer to Savannah Guthrie as so cute because she had a follow-up question. And now that I'm doing the rewatch, I couldn't help but notice all of the nods and shakes of the head of the woman in the background who apparently represents that community very fully, the QAnon supporting community. Okay, so he doesn't know anything about QAnon. Brett, is that true?
No, he does know about QAnon because he's like, but I do, you know, he only knows what's convenient to know for his argument. He knows everything about QAnon. And he says Antifa exists. That's why. It's like, have you been to your rallies? Because I know from the B-roll that we have that QAnon photos, QAnon signs are all over your rallies. So they exist, you freak. Also, QAnon obviously exists because they went to a pizzeria with a gun. And where they're to bust an underground pedophile ring, literally in a basement that didn't exist.
Yeah.
So it happens. And everyone should be absolutely horrified by this. Because QAnon, the Boogaloo Boys, these are people that the FBI and all of the militias that are emboldened by Trump's rhetoric, the FBI just busted a ring of them who were going to kidnap two governors. That's real. Yeah. That's real. And your ignorance is negligence because QAnon is creating actual unrest and violence, as well as every other conspiracy theorist that has become part of your base. And the reason that you pretend you don't know is because it benefits you politically.
Yeah.
And that's not all right.
Yeah. No, none of it was. The takeaway there is this could not really be much more like the white supremacist Proud Boys thing from the first debate. He's asked to condemn it. He pretends to not know anything about it, except that you leave with a very strong feeling that people in the group that he's being asked to condemn like that interaction. The Proud Boys are very happy with the first one. If you believe in QAnon, you loved all of that. Oh, Trump is pretending he doesn't know, but he has to. That's part of the plot. And he's thanking us for fighting pedophilia, something that he totally is against. They're gonna love that. And that's why he said every part that he said, because he wants to reassure those people. The Republican Party needs the QAnon movement, and it's kind of nice to them to see it expand since they believe that Donald Trump is some sort of Captain America figure that's gonna solve everything. It's insane. All of that was insane. Him saying he doesn't know if the Democrats are all satanic pedophiles and that Savannah Guthrie doesn't know. All of this stuff, throw it on the mountain of things that should be disqualifying in and of themselves, but won't be because this is 2020 and you can say and do literally anything you want.
Yeah.
In politics or media.
Also, I denounce white supremacists. No, you didn't. It took you 3 days. And the only reason you decided you had to denounce them was because that was a bridge too far. QAnon, everyone needs to make it a bridge too far. And the last thing I'll say about these two town halls is that there were higher ratings for the Biden town hall than there were for there was for the Trump town hall.
Hey.
Oh, I thought you were done.
Hey, we're gonna get into all that, buddy. I'm excited to talk about it too. Why don't we transition to that right now then? Because yeah, we could talk again. The white supremacist stuff came up, and his answer showed that he was clearly more angry at being asked about white supremacy than he is about the fact that there are white supremacists. There's a lot of other nonsense. What's the point? Doesn't matter. Nobody cares about anything. So the town halls were last night. We don't know exactly whose minds might have been changed by them, but we do know at least a little bit about who watched what. On ABC, Biden drew 12.7 million viewers from 8 to 9 p.m. On NBC alone, Trump got 10.4 million viewers in the same time slot, including the next half hour effectively that Biden got. ABC's event viewership average was 12.2 million. Biden beat Trump amongst, you know, the key demographic or whatever by a good bit. So that's the broadcast, not online for NBC, which might skew things a little bit. But if you look just at YouTube, at the end of the Trump's town hall, the NBC News YouTube channel showed 153,666 viewers were watching. ABC News's YouTube channel showed 507,445 for Biden, more than three times as many. So again, we're sort of reading tea leaves here about, you know, who was watched more. Honestly, if there is a conversation to be had about who was watched more, I find that to be shocking, because I don't think anybody was predicting that Joe Biden would get as large of an audience as Donald Trump, considering the, you know, the train wrecky nature of Donald Trump's every appearance.
I love it so much. And if one more person watched Donald Trump than watched Joe Biden, Trump would be out there saying huge ratings. He's got it. This, I think this is the one that cuts him to the quick more. And I know he's gonna be pointing to like Hank Green, one of the vlog brothers on TikTok, saying watch it on all your devices. That's a thing. And they say that K-pop stars are telling people to watch on all their devices. But either way, you lost. You lost, buddy. Take the L and hopefully get used to it.
Yeah, maybe. Look, you referenced earlier Frank Luntz. I find Frank Luntz, it's really interesting. For me, Frank Luntz and Nate Silver are sort of in a similar category, although different in a lot of ways. I appreciate the information they spread, have a lot of issues with everything else around it. So in this case, Frank Luntz says, trigger alert, I'm about to say something that will upset many people reading my Twitter feed tonight. My group of undecided voters say that the more Trump speaks, the worse he looks. So if you don't know Frank Luntz, that's good. You're a healthy human being. He does these focus groups basically to try to get glean lessons from these events. What?
Frank Luntz is responsible for every little term that the Republicans have used for the last 35 years.
I understand that. I explained that. Yes. So he most recently he is known for doing these sort of live Fox events and live debates and stuff like that. Yes, he does a lot of focus groups to try to create interesting frames around issues and stuff like that. He's important for the Republican Party historically. And so he's been doing these events. And supposedly they weren't big fans of Donald Trump in this. You might recall that in the debate against Joe Biden, one of the undecided voters called Trump a crackhead based on his appearance. And they were pretty negative towards Trump. Notably, during the vice presidential debate, they seemed to be more negative towards Kamala Harris than towards Mike Pence. So maybe this does mean something, this handful of people that Frank Luntz has pulled together. Maybe that performance where he's calling Savannah Guthrie so cute and stuff like that, maybe that's not gonna win over the suburban women that Trump so desperately wants to like him.
I don't know. I only saw your project, your stream title the other day, which was Trump desperate for housewives. Did you play his please clap moment?
Yeah.
Please like me. Please like me.
And he thinks saved a damn neighborhood.
In the past, Trump has been able to say things until they become at least perceived as true or of some merit, like anchoring the argument. Now it seems like he's just saying things and it makes him look more and more pathetic. And I love it. I love it. Yeah. And I hope it's true. I mean, I still have no idea how it really is bearing out there. Like I'm going through and playing the electoral map, interactive electoral map like it's like the top game on Steam right now, but it essentially like there's a 13-point lead for Biden in Pennsylvania that's about to drop off of the Real Clear Politics average, and the last two are like 2-point leads and 3-point leads. So it's getting close, and I would add to that all this news about people showing up early in record numbers to vote, and most of them being Democrats, is really going to, it gives kind of like a sneak preview to Republicans. So my guess is that even more of them will show up than we're going to show up before. So you can't take anything for granted, especially given the last cycle. And now knowing that there are certain things in the news that are motivating Republicans to vote more. So you gotta not cruise in this point, but yeah. it is nice to see people look at Trump and say like, I don't even want to help this guy. Now, are those undecided voters also ones that are less likely to actually vote because they're more checked out? And it is easier to motivate people in Trump's base who were just thinking that they so insulated they thought it was going to be an easy win. I don't know. That's why everyone needs to move out there, especially with Frank Luntz out there doing stuff like this. Because when I say every term, everything from death tax to right to work, all these things that are so frustrating to hear for the first time because they sound, you know, pretty good to someone who's just casually observing politics. That's this guy. And I know a lot more about him because I don't like him very much.
That is possible. I did take multiple courses specifically in political framing. I'm just saying.
I know someone who had relations with him.
Okay, you've got me beat. I don't know anyone that's hooked up with Frank Luntz. But I've been very consistent about that for a long time.
In politics, John, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that on your show.
It just got weirder. You made it weirder.
Palpably weirder.
Nobody needed that information, and people didn't get what's necessary to scrub it from their brain right now.
And I didn't mean I know more than you do, John. I meant I know more than I said just then about Frank Luntz. I didn't mean, where are we? Let's get back
together. You implying that you know more than me was not the most offensive thing that you just did. It was the hookup thing.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of moments on CNN like this lately. Anyway. Fresh off of his town hall performance, Donald Trump was on a retweeting and tweeting spree this morning, and he tweeted this, a really ominous bit of news. He said, Twitter shuts down entire network to slow spread of negative Biden news. Wow, this has never been done in history. This includes his really bad interview last night. Why is Twitter doing this? Bringing more attention to Sleepy Joe and Big T. And it's a story about Twitter shutting down the entirety of Twitter to stop the spread of anti-Biden news. It's great reporting being done by the Babylon Bee, which is a parody website. It's not true. Not true at all, and Trump should know that. Since he's on Twitter all day long, he'd have known if it had shut down. It's The Onion, basically. It's a not funny version of The Onion. It's fake news, so but not stupid. Even like the fake news he normally likes. They're not even trying to get people to think it's real. It's a fake website. So what do you think? Did he know?
The best part about this story.
Did he know?
No, he didn't know. He's an idiot. The best part is when he says Sleepy Joe and Big T, meaning big tech. The best part about this story is afterwards, there was a low T was trending to describe Donald Trump. Yeah. They started calling him low T, as in low testosterone, which is like, it's one of those, I mean, in the greater discourse of most people on the left, probably has a lot of internal fighting going on as a result of toxic masculinity. But among the people that support Trump, that has to be the biggest trigger word, is to say that Donald Trump has low testosterone.
He says he's talking about big tech. I buy it mostly because I really want to believe that he's not calling himself Big T, because, you know, 30 million people will start doing it too. Let me just briefly note, those commercials about the low T, they make me so mad, because I get it. Maybe it's a ratings thing, I don't know. They're not going to explicitly talk about testosterone, but like, don't try to make low T a thing. Just say testosterone, honestly. Like, it's so weird and fake. I hate a lot of framing like that, little terms. But that one always annoys me. Anyway,
it's like halitosis. So you say, halitosis is not a medical condition. It was invented for bad breath commercials.
Is that true?
That's absolutely true.
But breaking news, the Babylon Bee. Okay, so you say
now about horseshoe crab blood. Anyways, continue.
Okay, so you say he didn't know. Okay, I don't know if we're gonna do a poll. My explanation of what it should be was vague, admittedly. Basically, did he know that it was a parody and he was pretending it's not because it's convenient to him, or does he not know at all? The Babylon Bee is not as big as the Onion, admittedly. But Donald Trump would definitely know if all of Twitter had shut down. And so I don't, and it in did. My version, I don't, what's that?
All of Twitter did shut down. It went down yesterday for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But yeah. he probably did that. But they didn't shut Twitter down. It just had an outage.
It had an outage. That is true. Can we bring back up the graphic of the tweet? I'm not sure if it's going to be cropped in a way to demonstrate my point, but if we could take a look at that. Yeah, so it's not, unfortunately. But so when I produced this, it had 44,000 retweets. And it's the president, I don't know, honestly. I guess my vote is that he doesn't know, because as you say, he is an idiot. That's true, it checks out. But 44,000 people retweeted the president just stating as a fact, because they believe everything he says, that Twitter shut down the entirety of Twitter to protect Joe Biden and his bad interview, because that's what Big T does. And it's not true. And 44,000 people just retweeted it. They didn't apparently know that the Babylon Bee was fake. The vast majority didn't click through to even see. They just spread it. And so, look, this is definitely sad about Donald Trump. We can debate which flavor of sad it is, but it's also sad about Twitter, that this many people just will uncritically boost whatever it is that the person they like says.
I just want to say that when you say there's 40,000 retweets, I get it. And it takes, but that's not a lot of humans, because many of them are probably also bots. And I have to keep reminding myself of this. While Donald Trump has 87.2 million followers, 4 years into his reign, Barack Obama still has 123.9 million followers. So he still has more followers than Trump. That has got to drive Trump crazy. And something that's also got to drive him crazy, Katy Perry has 108 million followers. So the president of the United States, the Twitter president, has fewer followers than Katy Perry. Mm-hmm. Katy Perry.
Do you follow Katy Perry?
Yes.
You do. Okay. So you're part of the problem.
I do now.
Why do so many, are her tweets just that amazing? Why do so many people follow her?
She was, I guess, early on in it.
That's true. I saw The Rock had 200 million Instagram followers.
But she's active. She gets a lot of activity. On October 12th, she tweeted, "I see you and I love you." And she got 106,000 likes.
Okay, I'm gonna tweet that and I'm gonna see how many I get. It'll be less.
You've been tweeting stuff like, ugh.
It's the most honest thing I can tweet, honestly.
I just, I'm like, what?
Be on Twitter and not tweet, ugh.
I get emails like, Emma tweeted this, John tweeted, ugh. And I'm like, I guess I have to cross reference what it
something.
Was.
Yeah, something Emma tweeted probably. Anyway, okay, you know what? Let's go to something that might make me say So heads up to the director and the team. I'm gonna skip to the D block because,
by the way,
we are rapidly burning.
And as you're doing that, I just want to say that in the tweet, in the Twitch poll, no one at like a 89 to 11.
Didn't see the margin. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. So. This is the first time that we've been unanimous in these this little Supreme Court thing. It could have been dishonest. That's why I thought there might be disagreement, but apparently not. Lindsey Graham and the Republicans look like they're about to get what they want, which is a Supreme Court justice, damn the norms, damn the hypocrisy, all of that. It's been a complete sham, and she is going to be incredibly damaging on the court until it's reformed or expanded. Dianne Feinstein doesn't seem to have that big of a problem with it. Take a look at what she had to say about Lindsey Graham.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank you. This has been one of the best set of hearings that I've participated in. And I want to thank you for your fairness and the opportunity of going back and forth. It leaves one with a lot of hopes, a lot of questions, and even some ideas, perhaps some good bipartisan legislation we can put together to make this great country even better. So thank you so much for your leadership.
I hate that so much. I hate it so much. That this process has made her hopeful that our great country can become even greater. The fact that he is doing the last bit of salt in the wound after participating in stealing a Supreme Court seat and then saying, use the video against me, that we won't do it in our own last year, and then doing it in their own last year, pretending it's about the Kavanaugh thing because the person who should be most offended by that entire process is someone like Lindsey Graham, and then just pushing it through with literally days to go until the election. That makes her the person who might be in charge of that committee if the Democrats take over, and if there is to be reform of the Supreme Court, would have to be a very important part of it, who should know better. She is hopeful as a result of all that Lindsey Graham has done.
Thank you to the 87-year-old, literally 87-year-old Dianne Feinstein. You know, that back and forth reminds me of, there's an old SNL sketch with Eddie Murphy from the 80s where he puts on white face to see what white people are like when they're alone together. And the joke is, they give each other stuff. And he goes in as a white, it's like white chicks, but he's a white guy. He goes to a bank, and the bank manager says, here, take the money and give it back whenever, or don't. That's what it felt like. It felt like Dianne Feinstein didn't understand what just happened in politics over the last 25 years and didn't understand what happened in politics, you know, over the last 4 years. In the last 2 years since Lindsey Graham said, use this video against me, after Kavanaugh doubling down on all those thoughts, she doesn't understand it. And it didn't seem like there was any incentive for I don't know. It didn't seem like there was any inclination of her to change the rules in a way that would keep any of this nonsense from happening in the future. It just seemed like she was about to go over there and give him a hug, which, boy, she absolutely did.
And that's a great transition. Let's go to that. Yeah, so look, that's bad because of all that we've just been through, but also individually bad because they're both maskless. On average, they're 105 years old. Lindsey Graham refused to get tested for COVID despite potentially being exposed to it because he didn't want to have to not be involved in this process. Yet another way that he was effectively breaking the rules. He just broke the rules, by the way, in the scheduling of the vote on her in the committee. And literally in his speech just said, we can do whatever we want effectively because the Democrats are being mean to us. And she went up and maskless hugged him, which is terrible optics. It's terrible for the case that you're trying to make, that people need to be more responsible, and also offensive because of the individual man that you decided to do it with.
And not only that, but he also literally broke campaign finance law by asking for donations on Senate premises. So there are no consequences. The only consequence left at our disposal is to vote them out of office, something that we are handicapped against because of the way that the system is set up. We always come back to having to win the election by 4 percentage points or more to have a 75% chance. I was thinking about the Electoral College, which was set up originally to make it so that the people who knew about politics could have sway over politics. People who had the opportunity to be educated about what was going on in the world would have the power, and the people that didn't know what was going on wouldn't have the power. And there's all this argument that we need to keep it in place because we're going with what the original intent of the founding fathers was when it comes to picking the president. But their intent behind it is completely counter to what's happening. Now, uneducated people about politics, the ones who are not college educated, and this is a super elitist argument, but it's just one to prove the logic. Those are the ones that are picking the president. And the folks that have more at stake, the ones that are the more educated folks, And I'm just going with the way that the founders framed it. They wanted the elite educated people to dictate who was the president. And now the opposite is happening. And that's thanks to the Electoral College. And I think it would be a lot simpler to just get rid of it and let people vote.
Obviously, I agree. That's one of many reforms I think are coming, and one of many reforms that probably Dianne Feinstein would stand in the way of, because she still thinks that we're in the Reagan years and thinks that those years were good, and thinks that the Republicans, kind of like echoing a little bit of Joe Biden from last night, that they will be reasonable at some point. That Lindsey Graham, he's under like a fever dream right now, but that fever will break as soon as Donald Trump goes away. It's not going to happen. They have gotten what they want by doing these terrible things. Why would they stop doing them? And that's an issue.
Yeah, sorry. And some, before you move on, something even more ridiculous is the governor of Maryland just voted for Ronald Reagan for president.
Yeah, exactly. He might make it. But anyway, so that's an issue with them. It's an issue with the Supreme Court. It's also an issue with Dianne Feinstein. I really wish that she had lost her last election. She, what is she doing? Like in the interaction that she had with the Sunrise Movement like 2 years ago, she just doesn't get it. She doesn't understand the stakes in the challenges that face our country, and she doesn't get who the Republican Party is. She doesn't. And look, she's 87. At some point, it becomes harder to keep up with all of these insane changes that are happening. Some people do it better than others. She seems to be having a big problem with that. She's wrong on the issues. She's devoted to, you know, the will of these donors that obviously we don't agree with. She needs to be replaced. I'm assuming that she won't be running for re-election in 4 years, if I had to guess. But if she does, I really hope that like a Ro Khanna or a Katie Porter go up against her. I'm worried that they might not because of how much seniority she has. I really hope that it's an open seat that they or others can run in. But God, she has got to get out of there. This is not just cringeworthy. It is deeply bad for our country that people like her are standing in the face of reforms that we need.
I'll tell you what, Ro Khanna is in a really good position to eventually get that, because he's in a place with a lot of, you know, money. And he's also in a place where he has been on the record reaching across the aisle in specific ways, in very Justice Democrat ways. But that's an interesting career trajectory to watch. And he's a good, he's great at communicating.
He is, he's very good. He's very good. Everybody, it's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, so I've got Trashy here. Trashy is quite hungry for the garbage, and we had a lot to choose from this week. This was one of the biggest weeks for trash. Brett, who is your garbage person of the week?
DJ TJR. Donald Trump Jr. Here he is. Disgusting. God. Donald Trump Jr. is my garbage person of the week, because Donald Trump Jr. sees no irony in attacking Hunter Biden in a new ad, saying that it is Hunter Biden who is using his father's political position for his own gain. Take a look.
I'm Donald Trump Jr. I'm the son of the President of the United States. I understand the pressure of being a prominent member of the first family. Trust me, I've gone through it all. That's why I can say with absolute confidence that Joe Biden's son, Hunter, is one of the most unethical humans in political history. Let me say first that I'm not here to attack Hunter Biden on his personal issues. I don't want to talk about how Hunter Biden was discharged from the Navy Reserve for testing positive for cocaine. I won't do that.
I am Donald Trump Jr. I am the son of the President of the United States. Did not
I
know
play
if
a human
picked up on that, because my name is literally Donald Trump Jr. I have been told it's Dwight Schrute giving his speech. We will not go into that night.
Yeah.
I love also saying that he is one of the most corrupt humans in the unethical humans in the history of the United States. You know, because there have been some unethical spiders. Not to lump them. That'd be unfair to lump them all in. Right. There was some dogs have done some pretty naughty bad boy things.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And they're doing it on purpose because of how ridiculous it is. And they love it. They feel like they're being trolls, but you know, that's their only mode. They don't know any other way to be. I do like that the Lincoln Project stepped in and fixed it for them. So here is the Lincoln Project's version.
I'm Donald Trump Jr. I'm the son of the President of the United States. He's one of the most unethical humans in political history. Criminal conduct, prostitution, human trafficking rings, threats of extortion, business meetings, Russia collusion, public service, cocaine.
Okay, it's good. You know, isn't it weird that like, That story came out about Hunter Biden and they had this ad ready to go in just a day. That's weird.
Yeah,
that worked out.
I don't want to go into the purported cocaine usage of Donald Trump Jr. and his life partner hanging upside down at nights in a cave, Kimberly Guilfoyle. There is no evidence that they are doing any cocaine. There is no photos and memes going around of Donald Trump Jr. with puffy, sweaty Coke face and Coke chin saying the light bulbs are made of cocaine. There are no additional videos of him with puffy face on at that point where he has to decide if he's gonna do more cocaine or go to sleep, asking people to enlist in Trump's army. And there was no cocaine involved in Kim Guilfoyle going, "The best is yet to come." None of that. No cocaine. I don't want to go into that because that's beneath the office of the guy who's on TDR Fridays.
That's true. That's true. Look, we try to keep it above board. And that's why obviously I don't like Don Jr. I think he's awful. I agree with Brett, but he did keep it about the policy there and he didn't bring up personal stuff about Hunter Biden, as he pointed out. What an a-hole, honestly. What utter trash. What a trash human. And now he is maybe the worst person. I know that I hate Donald Trump, but the thing is, Donald Trump Jr. is just Donald Trump, but without the parts that Trump fans really like. Like, I'm not saying they hate him or anything, but whatever, like how Emma says that Trump has charisma or whatever, Don Jr. doesn't have that. He has like a try hard version of his father's worst qualities, and he can't even approach his father's arguable best qualities. He is like, I'm not gonna say, it was gonna get disgusting there, but he is what's left over. Once you squeeze out whatever's good of Donald Trump, that's what you've got left, is the junior.
I won't be any more specific
than that.
I will go, so don't say squeeze out Trump Jr. I will say that Trump Jr. is all of the parts of Donald Trump that Donald Trump doesn't really like.
Exactly, and that has come through in their relationship.
It's so good. I think Eric is the worst, but you know, you can't hate someone whose name you don't really know. So that's Eric doesn't really qualify for that. It's just such an obvious crappy family dynamic and I can't wait till we're rid of it. So please go vote.
Yeah, me too. This is gonna be another one of those references that probably few people will get, but I get kind of Multiplicity vibes off of that. Like they're all like attempted clones at Trump, but they've all gone wrong in some fundamental ways. Anyway, that's a reference.
Eric's the copy of the copy.
For my garbage person of the week, look, I'm sorry, I know. You want it to be something you weren't expecting, something new, a new type of garbage. But no, this week, I apologize. I have the same person who might be the most, there might be more of him in trashy than any other. And for the same reason, honestly, mine is going to be Tucker Carlson. And it's gonna be for the reason that he's come in here two or three times over the course of the pandemic. It is his insanely, obviously dishonest, grifty approach to the pandemic. And it was summed up very well in a little montage that Media Matters for America put together of his commentary about masks, which has gotten more deranged and anti-scientific and obviously just clout chasey as the months have gone on. Take a look as we walk backwards through his mask commentary.
Dissent used to be a defining feature of American life, but no more. Now we have mandatory consensus. Masks are good. Anyone who questions the utter goodness of masks is bad. What they're really telling you is that masks are magic. What appears to be a flimsy cotton face covering is in fact a holy amulet that protects us from disease more reliably than any modern medicine. Masks are great. They have their place. Surgeons wear masks in operating rooms. People wear masks in elevators and crowded stores, and good for them, it probably helps. We've been arguing that for 6 months before the Surgeon General himself recommended masks. We thought, why would masks be a bad idea? So we're not against masks, we never will be. Many schools that do plan to reopen will do so under a series of restrictions that have no basis of any kind in science. It's a kind of bizarre health theater. Students will be kept 6 feet apart, everyone will have to wear a mask, class size will be limited in some schools, there will be scheduled bathroom breaks, et cetera, no sports. Of course masks work, everyone knows that. Dozens of research papers have proved it. In South Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, the rest of Asia, where coronavirus has been kept under control, masks were key. So look, we understand there's a shortage of masks. We understand only certain people should get them because it's a triage moment. We get it.
Yeah, he gets it. So early on when he apparently wanted to stand out in comparison to someone like Sean Hannity and pretend that he accepted the science, because at that point it wasn't clear if Donald Trump was going to eventually take this seriously, he presented himself as the person who accepts the science and was telling you obviously masks are good, they're key to stopping this thing. But as Trump has gotten more opposed to doing anything, and more importantly, as the Fox News audience has been trained to think that doing literally anything to stop the spread of COVID is some sort of communist plot, he has gotten more and more deranged in his commentary about it. He knows, he's known from the very beginning how important encouraging mask wearing is, but he has decided that chasing an audience is more important than protecting lives. Not lives of people like me, I'm not up for grabs in watching his show. Conservative Republicans are, and he doesn't seem to care if they live or die as long as they watch his show while they're lying in that ICU bed.
How can they have written those in the past and then know that they've written that commentary and then write commentary in the future that is written in such a way as that they're denying that that other one ever happened? Like, yeah. That's insane to me. Without acknowledging it and pivoting, it's stupid. It's worse than stupid, it's evil, it's horrible, but that is Tucker Carlson. And also the most disingenuous thing that he said is like, there's not gonna be sports and I'm sad.
Yeah. Ugh. God, the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah, and the reason they can do, yeah, it does seem crazier to me. Like we talk off the cuff, we don't have scripts. I would sort like, we should be more inconsistent because it's different when you script it out very carefully. This is the thing that I'm delivering. And then 6 months later, that never existed. I'm just gonna tell people it doesn't matter. They don't have to wear them for some reason. It doesn't matter because even putting together a mashup like that, like I appreciate it, but how many Tucker Carlson fans are like, that's true. He has been hypocritical. Nobody cares because all of it is a cult of personality and they just reject whatever. Like once you fall in love with a person in media, it doesn't matter what they say, honestly. It doesn't matter how inconsistent they are, what they used to advocate for. People are so forgiving of their cult leader and nothing else.
Yep.
Trashy, you go digest over there. That's a big ball of wax you're gonna have to chew on for a while. As we find out who the Dragon Squad garbage person of the week was, all of you last week, the majority voted for all of the above, and I'm not gonna have it, so we took away that option. Which means that this week, you know, I'm gonna go up from bottom to top. 3% said Mike Lee was the garbage person of the week for endangering Senate colleagues and staffers. In second place, we have Texas Governor Greg Abbott for making it harder for Texans to vote. Second to last, I should say. Right in the middle there, we have a tie. 22% going to Amy Coney Barrett for insulting RBG's legacy, and 22% going to the California GOP for installing fake and illegal ballot boxes and insisting they're gonna keep doing that, even though they know it's illegal. But we do have a winner, and it's honestly who should be the garbage person every week, Mitch McConnell at 44% for prioritizing court packing over COVID and cackling like a drunken tortoise while doing so. Mitch McConnell is the Dragon Squad garbage person of the week. Thank you to the over 20,000 of you who voted this week.
I agree with that sentiment. Someone asked, why isn't Lindsey Graham in there? Because I just assumed there had been many videos made on him earlier this week, honestly.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, that's one of the issues of the segment is that we don't repeat the same thing, honestly. It hasn't usually caused that many problems though, because there's a lot of garbage. Anyway, Brett, thank you so much. I know that you've got a lot coming up. If anybody's joined us midstream, what can they watch later on?
What they can watch later on is there's a main show. Wazi Lambre is on main show today, or TY the Young Turks. And then after that, there's post game. And after post game, Phil Isco, creator of Sleepy Hollow, and a dear friend of mine, dating all the way back to when we invented this concept called Craig God of Wood, is on the show. And what else? After that, we have at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern time. It is a Pop Trigger reunion. Myself, Samantha Shocker, host of Daily Blast Live on Tegna Networks, all over in affiliates all over the country. Jason Carter, who's been on this show many times, and then also Bree Esrig, who has Lil Summer Ho. If you want to go to her Patreon, you can do that. That's it. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to we also have an amazing ceremony for some of our most beloved Twitch participants. So please be there at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern this evening.
That sounds awesome. And thank you again. Have a good one. I want to talk to you about a protest movement happening right now in Nigeria that has some comparisons to some of the social movements that have been sweeping across America all throughout this year. Joining us now to give us all the details is the founder and CEO of the 1954 Equity Project, professor of education at the Johns Hopkins University, and the star of Real Housewives of the Potomac, Dr. Wendy Osefo. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me.
Very glad to have you here. So this hashtag #EndSARS movement that's been going on, I have a feeling that many of our viewers in the United States probably are not very familiar with this. So what is this all about?
So #EndSARS is a direct, I would like to say, affirmation against the police department, a special unit within the police department of Nigeria. In the police department, they have an anti-corruption unit. And this unit is basically terrorizing the youth. Their job is not to do that, of course. Their job is not to harm anyone, but they are using their badge as a way in which to police the youth, kidnap them, torture them, and murder them. So right now there's an uprising going on in Nigeria that is calling for the Inspector General of the police to not only disband SARS as far as the department, but then to give them tangible actions moving forward on how they're going to address police brutality within the country.
And so this, the things that you're talking about, the torture, kidnappings, murder, and things like that, this has been going on for some time now, and it's well documented.
Absolutely. There have been multiple cases of youth, of Nigerian citizens who have been abducted, who have been tortured, who have been murdered, who have been killed. We even see this happening on camera. This is not something that's happened, you know, behind doors in some back alley. There is videotape evidence of this unit in the police department harming Nigerian citizens. And just to give you a little bit of backstory here, they say when they are then probed, why are you doing this? They are then saying that they're identifying these individuals as criminals. And then you ask them further, why are they criminals? They say because they dress well, because they have an iPhone. And for us Americans, that might sound a little bit bizarre, but in a country that suffers from a high rate of poverty like Nigeria, when they see people with these materialistic things, they automatically equate that to someone who is up to no good or who is doing bad things within society. But that's not true. So just because you see a youth with an iPhone, just because you see a youth dressed nicely does not give you, you know, the ability to sit there and harass them, kill them, torture them, and kidnap them. By all means, that is inhumane.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem like in theory, seeing young Nigerians, you know, having this conspicuous consumption would be a sign that things are working well, hypothetically. But they don't seem to think to see it that way. A little bit of context for American viewers. While I believe the median age in the U.S. is like something like 39 years old, in Nigeria, apparently, it's just 19. It is a very young population. And from what I've seen, it seems like this is a youth-led social movement. Why is it in particular that it's younger people being targeted? Is there some explanation for that?
So Nigeria has had a history of corruption, a history of impulsive political parties. And why I'm tying that into the question and what you're asking is that young Nigerian youth have seen this within the country. They have heard stories. I was born in Nigeria. I came to this country when I was fairly young. And I have heard stories from my aunts, my uncles, my parents about the ways in which the government has harmed them, has stymied their growth. So now we see Nigerian youth saying, hold on, you did this to our parents. You did this to our parents' generation. And we are not going to allow you to do this any further. And that's why I think this movement, the End SARS movement, is really being corralled by youth, because we have seen the damage a corrupt society, a corrupt government has had on our country. We are not saying that we want End SARS to just be the beginning. No, we're saying that we are not taking abuse any longer, that us as youth in Nigeria refuse to let the government preclude us from all of the greatness that we can have as the next generation in the country. So I am proud of the youth for taking this stance, because the government has really robbed the country for far too long.
While acknowledging that these protests are still, in their developing phases, after seeing months and months of the Black Lives Matter protests in cities across America, we've seen that here in America, it's led to a lot of people seemingly getting to understand the problem a little bit more. But a lot of state and local governments, the federal government certainly, don't seem, even after 6 or so months, to really have changed their position at all. And we've seen protesters being brutalized all over the country. So far with the End SARS protests, what is the reception like in terms of the police reaction, the government, society? How is it being viewed so far?
Well, they're not letting up. The youth are not letting up. And I don't believe that the government was expecting it to last this long. You know, when you come from a history of a country where there have been movements, and even the great musician Fela Kuti, he wanted to start a movement against the government. A lot of people didn't back him. So the government was probably expecting a few youths to come rise up and then it'll be quelled. This movement is just getting started. They're saying we're not going to stop. And I think that the police, the government is taking notice. I also think it's important that a lot of Nigerians who are making waves both at home and abroad are also speaking out against this, bringing attention to this. Whether it's musicians like Davido, Tiwa Savage, Wizkid, these are people who have platform. And that's another thing that we have to speak to. Whether we look at the End SARS movement and the Black Lives Matter movement, there is a special ingredient here, and that is social media. The ways in which these movements have been propelled beyond their borders, when it was Black Lives Matter here in the United States, the same people who are saying End SARS in Abuja were saying Black Lives Matter there and chanting George Floyd's name. So we are seeing a direct switch now that here we are in the United States saying End SARS. So it has been really an awakening for the Nigerian government. And I think that they know that they have to do something besides giving the youth lip service, because it has to end now.
That is just really amazing. The idea that this victim of police brutality here would be inspiring people in other countries is just amazing. Amongst all of this bad stuff that's happening, it's a little bit heartwarming at least to see that. In terms of the response to it, I know that especially youth-led social movements in some countries have faced internet crackdowns and restrictions, as well as violence. Have we seen either of those two so far?
It's starting. It's been bubbling up. There have been reports of that on Twitter. I don't have any necessary data to substantiate that, but there have been people who have tweeted that there have been things going on. I do know once protesters are arrested or they're apprehended, the first thing they do take is their cell phones. There's no irony to that, because they know that cell phones are the medium to which people communicate. But again, it's grown like wildfire. And while they might try to, arrest a handful here and there, the magnitude for which people are aware of what's going on is not going to allow for this movement to be stopped.
Okay. And so supposedly the Nigerian government is saying that they're going to have this new special weapons and tactics team to possibly replace that. Is that actually a substantive change? Is that just an attempt to defuse the protests?
That is an attempt to change the name to think that we will believe the smoke and mirrors. So now it's the hashtag has also been added, which is End SWAT, which is the unit you just mentioned. Because what Nigeria has a history of doing is that when they disband these different units, they just take those same officers and place them in different places, and they continue on the same behavior in which caused the first unit to be disbanded. So that's why the Nigerian youth have said, yes, thank you for saying that you will technically end SARS, but you will start another one. But that's not what we want. We don't want lip service. We don't want you to change the name and then these officers continue to terrorize, abduct, and murder people. We want there to be systematic reform within the police department. That's what we want. We want to see real change, not a name change.
Yeah, shuffling bad cops around rather than actually reforming the system. That's another thing that we have in common between the two countries.
Absolutely.
So finally, for someone who might be watching this that wants to track these protests going forward, are there any individuals or media outlets that you trust to deliver accurate information about the situation on the ground in Nigeria?
Absolutely. I would say, you know, make sure you follow Amnesty International. They're doing a great job, really tracking this. I will also say there is a document on change.org that talks about petitions and talks about ways in which you can help donate. You know, Nigerians, they are super passionate people, but right now they may lack different resources. So if it's just, you know, finding a way to connect with them to donate cases of water, to help donate, you know, megaphones, or even if you are not able to have that connection, but just having a big platform so you can amplify the conversation around the End SARS movement and bring a level of attention to it, all of those things help. I have cousins who have been protesting since 3 a.m. today. You know, they're not stopping. They're continuing to hit their boots on the ground because they want to see real change. So any and all help is appreciated at this time.
Dr. Wenny Osefo, thank you for joining us. And by the way, for being an example of using your platform to draw attention to it. We really do appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.